Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Lovely to be with you, Talk Back Gardening, this morning. It's December. It's the first weekend of December. That means our climatologist, Darren Ray, will give us not just his seasonal outlook for gardeners for this month, but for the whole of the summer season ahead. But I should welcome our personal favourite guest talkback gardener, Brett Draper, back in the chair today for John Lamb. Lovely to have you back in the studio, Brett.
It's wonderful to be back, Deb.
It's been so long. And really, we've spoken many a time on the phone because you're often dropping into the program, but first time we've seen you in the flesh for a very long time. So thank you for coming into the studio today. And a little bit later, we might talk about what to do with the hot weather, how we prepare our gardens and prepare ourselves for the jobs that we need to think about coming into summer.
That's right, Deb. Yes. I mean, summer, it's inevitable. Summer is coming, or the warm weather hopefully is coming, and I guess we'll find out shortly. But what we need to do in terms of getting our soil right, in terms of moisture retention in the soil, and how we can actually help to maintain that there by mulching and doing a couple of other tasks.
Wonderful. So get your pen and paper out and we'll get a list of what we need to be doing from Brett a little later in the program. I've also got two Gardening Australia magazines to give away in one prize pack, the last of the 30th anniversary editions and the new December issue. And if you'd like to jump in the queue now for a question for Brett, please do. We'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 1-300-222-891. We always love to receive your comments as well. You can do that on the text line, which is 0467 922 891.
Now, after a relatively mild spring, we've had a season, well, it's a bit of an unusual season, really, with just a little bit of a mini heat spike, to start. Earlier this week, we had a couple of days in the early 30s. And I guess, you know, is that likely to continue? And I guess the man that's going to be able to tell us that is Darren Ray. So we say a very good morning to Darren.
Hi there, Brett and Deb and everyone listening out there this morning.
Thank you very much for your time, Darren. Now, we've heard quite a lot just recently, particularly in the media about the La Niña in the Pacific Ocean and what that actually means. Is that something that's likely to affect us here in South Australia?
To some degree, yeah. So, you know, if we think back through the year, we did actually start the year in a very weak La Niña in the Pacific Ocean. So it did go back to neutral, as they typically do during the end of summer and early autumn. But that background conditions have been staying around in the Pacific Ocean, so tending to be a bit cooler out in the central and eastern Pacific away from us and warmer in the western Pacific in terms of the ocean temperatures. But it's been hovering around in the background all through the year. But the major thing through the year so far has been what's been going on in the Indian Ocean with that the wetter negative phase of the Indian Ocean dipole pattern, influence from the Indian Ocean, that's gone back to neutral, and as it typically does, or you know, always does during November. So it's more of a June to November thing. So that leaves us with this emerging push back towards La Niña conditions that we're seeing over the last month or so. Now, the important thing with La Niña, it does impact the eastern states quite a bit more strongly because they're closer to the moisture influence coming off the western Pacific. So and we've seen that over the last 4 to 6 weeks with a number of major rain events that have quite strongly impacted the eastern states. And we've picked up a little bit of that. So we saw a little bit of that come across pastoral areas, particularly through November. And we did get a little bit in Adelaide as well. So significant rainfall from that. But so that's where we're sitting at the moment is that sort of push towards La Niña conditions that we've seen in the last month or so is really the influence we're left with as we move towards the through summer. And so La Niña, the thing with La Niñas is they have their peak impact in December, and then they weaken off through the new year as you go towards autumn, and that's what I'm seeing in the modelling. And so it does suggest the strongest impact through the next month or so, then gradually weakening off, and it does impact the eastern states much more strongly. So we'll see some of that, but not as much.
Not as much.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so, and then is that likely then to affect other weather systems coming through for us during summer?
Yeah, you do see impacts on the, I mean, the tropics essentially just broadening in La Nina conditions over Australia. So we do see a bit more tropical moisture coming down over us. So some of those moister, more humid days, which we've had a few of already, tend to see a bit more of those in La Nina summers than we might do otherwise. So not all the time. So it's not always around. It depends on what's going on with the strength of the tropical activity. But yeah, so there is a little bit more of risk for gardeners and farmers as well, I guess, and viticulturalists. It does increase the risk of fungal diseases a bit in these sorts of La Nina conditions. So once again, it's not looking super like a super strong event, like say 2010 into 2011, but it's certainly there. It's crossed over the thresholds into a La Nina event, and looks like it'll stay around a bit through till about autumn. And the other thing is, you do tend to see a bit more sort of southeasterly weather conditions. So tend to see, you know, lots more of the winds sitting in the southeast, and that's good for sea breezes and makes for pretty pleasant weather a lot of the time. You tend not to go into the hot northerlies as much in the La Niñas. So it does get warm, but it tends to stay more in that sort of high 20s, low 30s, rather than pushing up into the, staying in the high 30s or 40s for periods of time. So less extreme heat.
Mm, sounds like Goldilocks weather.
Well, it's pretty pleasant, yes.
Yeah, very pleasant. So, Darren, then what's the likelihood of rainfall across South Australia in December?
Yeah, so if you think back to the background conditions, you know, we've got that sort of warmer than average ocean temperatures around northern Australia as you get in La Nina conditions, and so that sets a background, and so there's a bit more moisture that could come down over us, and so we're basically watching the pulses of tropical activity that I've been talking about, so things like the Matagorda Oscillation, Equatorial Rossby waves, so things that come across along the equator and push that moisture down. So they occur in bursts on and off that happen every sort of 4 weeks or so. And so it's a bit quiet at the moment. So basically what we're seeing is not a lot of strong tropical activity at the moment that's pushing down over South Australia. And so there's not a lot of rainfall around over the next, say, out to about mid-month. And then it looks like things kick off a bit more and we get a bit more tropical activity developing. And so rainfall kicks off a bit more around mid-month, and does look like it'll get a little bit more active from that period from around mid-month up until around about Christmas time.
Mm, okay. And then temperatures also for December, Darren?
I'm not seeing anything super hot in the modelling at all. So, you know, looking at a range of modelling, seasonal modelling systems, and in the shorter term weather. So, you know, we've actually got some, you know, really quite mild temperatures for this time of year at the moment, which is pretty pleasant to be out gardening. So, you know, in sort of low to mid 20s. So it does look like it cools off again a little bit more even in early next week, and then gradually warms up as you go through. Gradually warms up a bit more, so more into the mid high 20s, perhaps even the odd day in the low 30s as we go through towards the end of the year. But nothing, not seeing anything particularly extreme in there at all. So it looks pretty pleasant for the rest of the month, temperature-wise.
A relatively mild start to summer, really.
Yeah, which is perfectly typical of La Nina. You tend to not see extreme heat in particularly the first half of summer in La Nina years.
Mm. Now, Darren, can I put you on the spot a little bit and ask you about that special day on the 25th of December? What's Christmas Day going to be like?
Yeah, what's Christmas Day looking like?
Yeah, is it going to be prawn and seafood, or is it going to be a turkey roast and pudding?
Yeah, it's... I didn't do too badly last year, this sort of tie around the head with a sort of combination of modelling and experience and probably a fair dose of luck as well, I suspect.
It's all so, skills. Claim it as skill, Darren.
Thanks, Deb. You're always so nice. But it is actually looking pretty similar to last year, I think. So something on the milder side. So I'd probably going 25, 26. The rainfall does look like it ramps up, as I mentioned, from about mid-month. But I suspect that'll all sort of happen in the week ahead of Christmas. So I think Christmas Day will probably be on something on the milder side, with a little bit of luck, no rain around. Looking like a pretty pleasant Christmas to be outside in the backyard with your family and friends.
Wow, that sounds fantastic, Darren.
Sounds like a perfect Christmas day.
Yeah, if you've planned that well. that's obviously December. What is then likely going to happen after December? So going into January, are we going to start to see things then start to become a little bit warmer and possibly drier?
It does look. Just looking at some of the latest modelling this morning before talking to you guys. They've got a bit of a cool spell in the first week or so, 10 days of January. So it does warm up a little bit through to New Year's. And then it does look like in the first week of the new year, it does cool off a bit, warms up again through to the towards the end of the month. So it looks like the worst of the heat in January is probably in the last 10 days or so of January. And I'm not seeing, despite the La Nina influence that, probably will hit the eastern states a little bit in January, February. Not seeing it super wet for South Australia. So not looking like there'll be much, not much in the way of rainfall around through January. So, and February does look like it'll pick up a bit. So it does look like the sort of timings of the pulse of the tropical activity might actually miss January to a large extent. And then focus on February in terms of the rainfall.
Mm. So is it likely that you think that we might just get some average rainfall? Will it be below that sort of average for January then?
The rainfall in January is highly variable. Mm. So not the average is actually not particularly high. Really truly tricky to say, but it does look like it probably tend on the drier side things through January, and then probably tend to be a little bit wetter than average in February.
Yeah, okay. And so is heat waves likely, or are we going to continue and just get these little heat spikes?
In La Nina, you do tend to get more of the heat spikes, and the temperatures do stay more in that sort of high 20s, low 30s kind of band. So less of a heat wave risk. It does look like sort of that, second half of January does look like it warms up a bit. But it doesn't look like anything particularly severe, so I'm not sort of super concerned about the heat wave risk. It doesn't look like it's over the top. We'll probably sneak one in there in the second half of January. It does look like it cools off as we go through towards autumn. The risk of heat wave does look like it reduces pretty quickly as we go through towards autumn in February. So, not looking like a particularly severe season for heat waves this year, which is typical of La Nina conditions.
Yeah, that sounds almost perfect for gardening, Darren, right through the period.
Yeah, it's La Nina summers are very nice. You get lower bushfire risk, so not no bushfire risk, but tend to be lower bushfire risk, lower heatwave risk, increased risk for your fungal diseases, as I mentioned. So that keeps garden. It can be a bit have a bit of impact on gardeners and viticulturists.
Mm. So it might be that gardeners that have their temporary shades that they put up for several months of the year this year might not need to pull them out by the sounds of it.
They probably will need to leave them, use them a lot less by the look of it. So, yeah, it looks like a pretty fairly reasonable summer.
Wonderful. Well, I'm happy with that.
And just to finish, what I can see of autumn at this stage all just looks very average. Not seeing anything... anything particularly unusual in terms of autumn in the modelling at the moment it's all looking fairly pleasant over the next few months.
So Darren, well look, that's very encouraging. I mean, just to hear that and to hear such a wonderful prediction for Christmas Day, we'll certainly hold you to that. No, we're only joking, we won't hold you to that, but
I mean, it's probably worth mentioning. I mean, in La Nina conditions, we've seen some flooding in the eastern states, and there's been some significant flooding there. So, I mean, La Nina events do see increased flood risk out of those. So, you know, can't completely discount, you know, that we do get a system come through at some point that, you know, we do see some significant thunderstorm activity and you know, intense rain out of that. It's just a lower risk than what you'd see in New South Wales and Victoria. So that's the other thing, just to keep people to keep their eyes on as well. But, you know, we can still get some intense rain in when everything lines up.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, Brett, as always, we love your seasonal outlook, especially when it's the whole season ahead. And pleasant is a word I like, especially when we're thinking of gardening. So, as always, thank you so much for your wonderful seasonal outlooks at the beginning of every month. And we are actually back on New Year's Day. Any chance of catching you then, or is that going to be a hard ask?
Oh, I'll be round. I don't have too many. I haven't thought that far ahead, to be honest. It's been a pleasure doing another year with you guys, and as it's been for a few years now. So, yeah, always love talking to you and the listeners out there.
No, we thank you very much for the work you've done for us this year, Darren, and just so spot on with your predictions. So, fingers crossed, you'll be with us New Year's Day, and I look forward to talking to you in 2022.
Excellent. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you. Darren Ray, our independent climatologist with his seasonal outlook for gardeners. And I know lots of people really listen very closely to that. Don't forget that this hour is podcast every week in, week out. So wherever you get your podcasts, obviously I would recommend the ABC Listen app. You can go to that and you will hear this hour of Talkback Gardening. And you can hear all of the programs that we do here on ABC Radio Adelaide for up to a week. If you go online and check out the episodes, we will get back to your Talkback Gardening calls in just a moment.
Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Our special Talkback Gardener this morning is the wonderful horticulturalist and garden centre manager, Brett Draper. But I do need to let you know that we'll be finishing a little bit earlier this morning in Talkback Gardening because we've just been made aware that Premier Stephen Marshall, Health Minister Stephen Wade, Police Commissioner and State Coordinator Grant Stevens and Chief Health Officer, I should say, Professor Nicola Spurrier are going to be presenting a media conference at 9:45 this morning with a COVID update for the state. So we will bring that information to you. Unfortunately, Brett means we'll have to truncate our morning somewhat. So let's get straight into our calls. Rosalie is at Northgate. Now, you're after a particular seeds, Rosalie.
Yes, good morning, Brett and Deb. Yes, I was given some seeds. I think the pronunciation is something about Velthemia. Velthemia.
Velthemia. Okay. Right. What's your question, Rosalie?
Well, how do I plant them? They come in like a little, almost like a flower bud, and you can see there's a little black seed in the middle. And I'm not sure, do you take the seed out? What conditions do you plant these Velthemias in? I've never heard of them before.
I'm to be honest, I haven't either. I'm wondering, so it's actually a seed pod that you've got, is that correct, or is it?
Yes, yeah, I've got quite a few of them, probably got a dozen of these little seed pods.
Right.
And the seed is in the middle, it's a little black seed in the middle.
The only...
I don't know whether you... Yep.
The only Velthemia I can think of, I think, is a type of bulb. Have you seen, what sort of plant does it come from? Have you seen the plant growing?
It's a green leafy plant.
Yes.
Sort of like, I think my friend's got it in the shade.
Yes.
But I've just split one of these, and there's two little, they almost look like a little black apple seed. There's two of them in the pod.
Right. Yep. Okay.
So.
And is that still green or is that dried?
No, it's in between, actually.
It's in between, okay.
Yeah, it's not really. Some of them are crispy, and some of them are still soft.
Right, okay. So generally, with most seed pods, and this goes for most plants, when you leave them on the plant, for instance, in nature, what would happen in nature is that the plant would finish flowering, the seed pod obviously then develops, it then dries, and it usually splits open, and those seeds then drop. And if it's a bulb, they generally, and it's a spring flowering bulb, I assume it flowered in spring.
Look, I don't know. I was at my friend's place. She gave me a handful of them.
Yeah, yeah. They're usually a late late winter, early spring sort of flowering bulb. So what would happen is you can pick them beforehand too, but you can pop them into a paper bag and let them mature naturally, and the pods split open, and then you can actually then plant those seeds. What would happen is normally in their natural environment is that after it flowers and the bulb starts to die down, those seeds would naturally germinate with the autumn rains that would occur in autumn. So probably the best thing to do would be to plant them in autumn, that mid-March time onwards, and let them germinate from there. And that's when they would then grow and then start to develop from that, because that's what they would normally do in the natural environment.
Okay.
All right, but it's important to let them mature in the pod. So don't necessarily open them too quickly. Just pop them into a paper bag and let them pop open and get the seeds out naturally that way.
Okay.
All right. Okay. That way you've got the best chance of getting or making sure that they're nice and viable.
Right. I guess if I try to do a few different methods, one will work.
That's right. And you can pop them into the ground, or you can pop them into a seed tray and plant them from there. But I would certainly be doing that in autumn.
Well, move along, Rosalie. We've got lots of people and we've got a short program now. I went online while Rosalie was describing that, and it says it's a South African native.
Right. Yes.
And often referred to as red hot poker, which... one of the Velthemia bracteatas, which I do know the sort of very standard red one. But anyway, Rosalie, good luck with that. Maggie is in Norwood and wants to get some advice on soil moisture. Hi, Maggie.
Hello. I've got one of my veggie garden beds has always been dry, and we've tried lots of things to improve it. Anyway, after all this rain, we went and got... to a large landscape supply store and bought this special mulch called Huflungdung, which was very moist when you took it out of the bag, and we put that on top, hoping that would, because lots of other friends have had a great deal of success, but with these few hot days we've had, I've noticed that that's drying out now, and then the dry soil is still there. So I just wondered, should I put straw on top to keep the moisture into this stuff?
Sure, yep.
What suggestions do you have?
Yeah, now Maggie, is this a raised bed, or is it just a normal garden bed at ground level?
It's raised. I haven't done it properly. Well, it's got some bricks around the edge.
Yes, yes.
Which keep it raised. I've also just done some planting of small lettuces and stuff, which are really struggling with the dry soil.
Yeah, okay. So what it sounds like, and I was actually going to touch on this later in the program, but we can do that now, is that the soil has become water repellent or hydrophobic, which means it's not allowing the moisture to penetrate or hold in the actual area. The best way to correct that is to use or apply a soil wetting agent. And there are many different kinds on the market. Now, your mulch is really good on top at helping to reduce the amount of moisture loss out of the soil, but it doesn't do a lot to help maintain or get the actual moisture into the soil. So what I'd be suggesting you're doing, I assume you've just got the mulch that you mentioned just on top at the moment of the soil. You didn't work that into the soil?
No.
So what I'd suggest you do is just to scrape back that mulch, get yourself a soil wetting agent, and a liquid one will probably work a lot quicker than what a granulated one will, and apply that thoroughly to the area and then water it in really thoroughly so it penetrates down into the actual soil profile, and that will hold the moisture and get any moisture... future moisture that you put on down into the soil, and then pop your mulch back on top. The mulch you mentioned is a really, really good mulch, and it is super absorbent, but and it's got some nutrient in there as well, which is really good for soil health and plant health, but it won't do anything to help the water holding capability of the soil underneath if you do not get a wetting agent into that first.
Okay.
All right.
So eco hydrate or something like
that's
that.
That's right. There's several on the market. Yeah, eco hydrate is a fantastic organic based wetting agent, and it works really, really well. Just be aware too that if you've got plants planted in there and you do get some wetting agent on the leaves, just make sure you wash it off the leaves really well, because if we do have a slightly warmer day with the sun, they can damage, depending on what sort of plant it is, of course, but some plants are more sensitive to others. Just make sure that you wash it off the leaves really thoroughly.
Okay, good. Thank you very much for that.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call, Maggie. Hazelwood Park is where Lorraine has, and she's got some rhododendrons that need some help. Hi, Lorraine.
Hello, how are you?
Well, thank you.
Last year, my rhododendrons got the red spider mite, very severe.
Mm.
I have sprayed with wettable sulphur, and then that didn't do a lot, and I was told to try Maverick, and that really hasn't done a lot either, I don't think. What I'm worried about, I've got a lot of new shoots coming, and the old leaves are still on. It's quite a big tree, and I'm just wondering what's the best way to look after, care for it.
Okay. Lorraine, are the mites still active on the tree, or are you still seeing the damage that they've done previously?
I think it's the damage that was previous.
Yeah, the reason why I say that is I also have a rhododendron which was very badly affected, and I did control it. I actually used a natural soap-based product called NatraSoap, which actually works very well as a miticide, but my tree was much more manageable in terms of being able to reach and spray it. When it's a larger tree, it's a little bit difficult. But the leaves that were damaged back in summer from the mites have remained on there, and the plants looked quite sickly for a period of time, and it's really only now that the new growth is starting to come through that it's looking healthy. If I was you, I would make sure that you keep a very close eye on the tree itself, because if we start to see some warmer, drier weather, that's the conditions that mites like to actually breed up in. The moment, so just observation is a real key. It's a really important that you keep on top of that. And if you do see any new damage, particularly on those new leaves, that you get onto it straight away. Now, if you're going to use wettable sulphur, just caution you, if it's in really hot weather, that it can actually damage the foliage of the plant. So you're right, your Maverick or your NatraSoap is a good way to control them. But also look at giving the plant some nutrition. It's really important that it's had some stress from the mite, so it's really important that you give it a good feed with a well-balanced and there's some organic based acid-loving fertilizers for camellias and rhododendrons and azaleas on the market. That would be ideal. And a regular seaweed tonic, a sea sole, a sea mungus, one of those type of products work really, really well in helping the plant recover from that stress.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I have been giving it the acid-loving sort of fertilizer. I've given it a handful every month.
Yeah, that's...
It's in a large wine barrel.
Okay, look.
And really care for it, because it's the only one that's really flourished in my garden. So
it'll be well on its way now. If you're fertilizing it a little and often, and that new growth's coming through with the weather that we're having and the season that we're likely to have, it will recover quite quickly from now.
Fantastic, Lorraine. We will move on because we've got a truncated program today. Let's go to Tea Tree Gully. Hasmik, you had to get rid of your fig tree. What's your concern? Hasmik, are you there? No, Hasmik's listening probably to the radio rather than on the telephone. So what we're going to do is give away our magazines up front now. So if you have not won something from the ABC in the last month, we've got two magazines for you. The 30th anniversary edition from November and the new December issue of ABC Gardening Australia magazine. If you haven't won anything for a month, call now 1-300-222-891. It's 25 minutes to 10.
Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Tanya is the magazine winner. Well done. We will send that out to you. Congratulations. So no more calls. Now is Hasmik back from Tea Tree Gully. Hello.
Yes, hello, good morning. My question is...
Oh, Hazmik, you're going to have to turn your radio off. I'm really sorry. We'll have to come back to you in a moment. It just doesn't quite work like that. If you're ringing us up, just flick your radio off and we'll come back to Hazmik in a moment. Ian is at Banksia Park. What's your apricot tree question, Ian?
Oh, the tree has got quite a good crop on it, but it's getting quite high and it's got a lot of new growth, probably, you know, a metre high above the fruiting branches.
Yes.
And I want to net the tree to keep the birds away. Would it cause any problems to cut off that new growth?
No, Ian, not at all. Not at all. We're seeing that quite a lot at the moment with stone fruit. Now that the weather is starting to warm, and particularly ones that were pruned heavily during the winter months of the year, they've gone straight back into that strong growth. So you could really cut that back by 50%, that growth at least by 50%, so you're able to get the net over your tree and protect your crop.
Well, I don't want the tree any higher than it already is.
No.
Look, so
summer pruning is actually a really good way of being able to control the actual height of the tree and the structure of the tree, that's what you would need to do is just reduce the height of those shoots that are going up without necessarily opening up the actual structure of the tree, because you don't want too much sun to come in and possibly damage the fruit or the bark that's in the middle there, but certainly reduce that growth, and you can do it by at least 50%. That would be fine.
Oh, good. Oh, well, I'll give that a try, because it's just getting too high anyway. And you know, to manage the tree, to manage the fruit.
Yeah, and good luck. Hope you get a lovely crop of apricots.
Oh, they're looking good so far.
That's great. Thank you for the call, Ian. Now, let's hope it's third time lucky with Hazmik. Hello.
Yeah. Oh, who? Mick?
Yeah.
Are you talking with Hazmik?
Yes, we are talking to you, Hazmik. What's your question for Brett?
My question is about a huge, huge 50-year-old fig tree which was growing next to my fence. I had to fix the fence, so they tried to get rid of the fig tree.
Right.
Now, they poisoned it, and it's growing wild and bigger. My worry, my main worry, is the birds who eat the fruit. Is it going to poison them? What can I do about it? Because the tree was poisoned, but it didn't die and gives fruit, and the birds love it.
It's unlikely that it will be a problem for the birds that are there. If depending on obviously what they used, I assume they would have used a commercial blackberry or tree killer, but it doesn't sound like that it's worked on the tree, so the tree's actually continuing to grow and produce fruit. Hazmik, that's unlikely to cause an issue for the birds in the environment.
Because I have lots and lots of different kinds of birds which come to my garden. I have few exotic tricks and they love it, and I never ever poison. But this person said, oh, you have to get rid of this fig tree, otherwise we can't fix the fence. And they did, but the fig didn't die, tree didn't die, and it's growing. And so my main worry is the birds, really.
Yeah.
So if they are not going to die or get poisoned, I wouldn't worry about
it. No, look, I think you're quite safe. The fact that the tree is growing happy and healthy and it's got fruit on it means that whatever they applied really hasn't had any effect on the tree. So I think your birds are very safe.
Okay, good. Thank you.
good news. Thanks, Hazmik, for the call. Let's go to Elizabeth. Now, Morris, you've got a question relating to tulips.
Yeah, good morning, Dad and Brett. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah. Listen, I've got some daffodils and irises going at the back. But
yes.
They've finished blooming. Now, they've got the long stems, the burnt stems on them. Now, do I cut them off or do I dig them up and replant them?
The daffodils and the irises, and I assume you're talking about Dutch iris, are they?
Yes,
the bulbs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once they've actually started to dry back, and that the leaves have gone from green now to a dry brown, or are they still green?
Yes. No. Some of them are green, and some of them you've got different types. You know, that are green, some are burnt.
Yeah.
You know, like straw, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if you with your daffodils and your Dutch iris, if you don't intend to move them into a different spot next year, you can just leave them in the ground where they are. Those spent flower spikes and foliage that is there now, you could now cut off. because they're of no use to the plant now. Once they've dried, all of the green material and energy's gone back into the bulb ready for next year. Now, your tulips can be a little bit different because tulips require certain number of hours of chilling for them to flower next year. So that's a really good idea to actually dig them up and store them in a paper bag in a relatively cool, dry cupboard until autumn, and then pop them into the crisper of your fridge in autumn for about 6 weeks before planting them again. So the tulips at this stage, and while they've still got the flower spikes on there, you'll know where they are and you'll be able to dig them up, particularly if you want to have good flowering next year. So that's...
It was a bit hard because I've got alyssum around them as well as a flower bed in there, alyssumian,
Okay. Well, look, if you want to leave them in the ground, you can. It might just mean that depending on how our winter goes in terms of how cold the soil gets, it will just determine how much or how good the bloom will be this coming spring.
Okay, then I'll do that then anyway. I'll just cut them off and then leave them in the ground. I think that'd be easiest.
Yeah, and wherever you've cut the bulbs off, now's the time you can mulch that garden bed and that'll insulate the soil as well and help to retain the moisture that's in there ready for the season.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Brett.
You're more than welcome.
Thanks, Morris, for calling in, and thank you to everyone that's called in this morning. I might prevail upon you. You were going to get us in our correct headspace for summer, Brett, with some of the things we need to think about coming into the summer season. So it's really about soil moisture. That's our starting point, isn't it?
It is all about soil moisture, Deb, and we've already had it in a couple of questions today that soil itself, when you water, doesn't necessarily hold the moisture that's in there. So before you look at applying a mulch or any sort of covering to the top of the soil, it's a really good idea to check the soil water holding capability. And if you water the area and you find that the moisture doesn't hold in the soil or you dig back through the soil and it's dry underneath, there's a good chance that the soil has become hydrophobic and it needs a wetting agent applied to it to help the moisture to penetrate and hold in the soil. Once you do that, it's then a really good idea to look at applying a mulch. And there are many different mulch products on the market. Organic mulches are generally best for your soil in terms of soil health over a long period of time. I know for some people that might be in bushfire-prone areas that necessarily, you know, organic mulches are not always the way to go and they may need to use a gravel or something like that. Where you've got a situation like that, any mulch is better than no mulch, so you can do that. But in a normal situation, organic mulches break down over a period of time. They add beneficial microorganisms and bacteria and structure into the soil. But the important thing with mulch is not only does it help to retain moisture, it actually works like a bit of a blanket and helps to insulate the soil temperatures. So, for instance, in a veggie patch, if you use a pea straw, for instance, in hot weather, that helps to keep the root zone nice and cool, in fact, up to 10 degrees cooler than what it would be if you didn't have a mulch, which can be the difference between your tomato plant producing well and surviving and not surviving. So it's just something that you can do that's quite simple, that you can apply to the area, which will give you long-lasting benefits to make sure that you get the best out of your garden.
Yeah, mulch is the way to go, isn't it? And I noticed such a difference. And I've been lucky this year. I've had a lot of nasturtiums coming up that are kind of a natural mulch as they die off. Is that something that we can utilise?
Absolutely, Deb. And we get lots of things that self-seed in the garden. And in fact, it's been a great year for nasturtiums. I've had the same thing, which has been really good.
And they look beautiful as well. You get that bright colour.
They do, yeah. For instance, if you have a crop of peas or sweet peas, for instance, I like to grow a lot of sweet peas.
And
the same thing, yeah. After they finish flowering, I just pull them down to where they are and just break them up. I actually use some hedging shears and just chop it up a little bit, and I get a homemade mulch. I mean, it's nature really returning that material back into the soil, and you getting the benefits from that, and your plants getting the benefits from that.
Which is absolutely wonderful. So mulch is the big thing. So we need to make sure that we mulch. And what about irrigation?
Yeah, look, one of the things is too, we really haven't had to reach for the irrigation too much. And the time is coming when we need to. And it's important that when you need to, if you've got either micro irrigation or drip irrigation in the area, that it's actually working to its full potential. So it's a really good idea. And today would be a great day to actually get out and actually test it and just make sure sure that all of the drippers and all of the little sprayers, for instance, are working. And if you've got inline drippers that you might put under mulch before you mulch, it's actually a really good idea to test that as well to make sure that it's working effectively and efficiently, because the last thing you want to find is that you've got some areas that are missing out, and you don't want that to be, you know, plants that you start to see being getting sick, or you start to lose them as a result of that. So it's a really good idea to test that before applying that mulch to the area that's there.
Yes, I've certainly lost one of my beautiful roses last season, and it was tragic, you know, seeing that go after all of these years. So you do have to be careful. What else can we talk about in terms of what's hot in garden centres this weekend? Because your other hat, of course, is garden centre manager. Mm. For people that are wanting their gardens to look nice and bright for Christmas Day, what can they expect to find this weekend?
Oh, Deb, there is a wonderful array, and look, at the moment in your annuals, for instance, your petunias are looking absolutely spectacular, and vincas have started to come through. Lots of people are excited that the vincas have started to come through, and they're a really lovely summer annual, and they will cope particularly well with the conditions that we're likely to expect. Hydrangeas are looking spectacular at the moment. The whites, the pinks. We've seen a bit of a shortage of blue hydrangeas this year, and that's been right across the board. And I'm not quite sure what the reason is behind that, but they've been very much in short supply. So if you're in a garden centre and you see a lovely blue hydrangea and you want one, I would say grab it, because there's not likely to be many around.
That's right. So if you see one, grab one. Of course, tomatoes, the perennial favourite at this time of year.
There are lots and lots of tomatoes, Deb. And look, there's a fantastic new variety called Sweet and Neat, which is a beautiful patio tomato, which is ideal for growing in pots. So it lends itself beautifully for balconies, courtyards, that type of thing. It produces fruit profusely, and it's one that's well worth trying.
Okay, lovely. And just in terms of hanging colour, because one thing that people do at Christmas time, whether they have planted them in the garden or not, is to make things really shine for Christmas Day. They get that hanging colour. What would you recommend?
They do. And look, there's lots of things that you can use. And for instance, Calabricolas, which is a perennial plant which actually grows beautifully in the garden, also lends itself really, really well to a hanging basket or an urn or some sort of pot, because it will spill out over the edge. And it's something that you can grow in the sun. Not a lot of plants necessarily like to grow in a lot of sun, for instance. Some of your geraniums, some of your big series geraniums are looking spectacular in hanging baskets as well. And there's a whole range of those. There's Big Splash, there's Big Pink, there's Big Red, there's Big Rose, and they're looking spectacular. And even ivy geraniums too in hanging baskets that are trailing down are looking spectacular.
How gorgeous.
Yeah. And don't overlook also some spreading petunias. There's a whole range of spreading petunias which actually have a cascading effect to them as well. And again, they will last right through the summer months and look spectacular.
So you don't have to be a lonely little petunia in a pumpkin patch. You can be spilling over with colour. Well, Brett Draper, we are in a holding pattern at the moment, of course. We're waiting this media conference in relation to the COVID state of our state. But I would like to thank you so much for stepping into the chair for John Lamb today. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you for joining us on so many occasions in 2021. We look forward to welcoming you again back in 2022.
It's been a great pleasure, Deb.
And until next week,
good gardening.